The Athletic.
Hello, welcome to 1874, a podcast all about Aston Villa Football Club for The Athletic. I'm Dan Bardell, joined as ever by The Athletic's Villa writer, Greg Evans. Unfortunately, a defeat to dissect, but some good news is that right now you can subscribe to The Athletic for a very special price. Enjoy great analysis and in-depth features, including all Greg's stuff and all the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free podcasts for less than £1 a week. All you got to do is go to theathletic.com/villapod and you'll be able to sign up and enjoy all those benefits that I've just spoke about. Greg, it's good to see you. We're doing video today, aren't we? I'm going to get it out of the way because you've already given me some juke before we've started. It's the first time you've actually seen me for a while doing the podcast on video, and you've some questions about my hair, I understand.
Yeah, it's good to see your face again, Dan. I almost recognise you. You almost look back to normal. What was the decision behind it all?
Just looking to make a play for the latest Romania squad, to be honest. Remember in 1998 when they all dyed their hair blonde. If you can't try these things during lockdown when you can't do anything, Greg, then there's no other time to try them, is there? So I thought I'd have a change. I wanted the Sergio Aguero look, but it keeps going blonde. I can't seem to do anything about it. So we'll go with it, and we'll probably, let's face it, I need a haircut, so it'll probably be coming off at some point.
Just remind me of your age again.
That's a good question. I think I'm 35. I can't even remember.
We've all lost a year, haven't we?
Yeah, I can't even remember how old I am nowadays. That's how bad things have got. 35, older than you. Surprising. Most people would be surprised to learn that.
So that would be like the equivalent of Glenn Whelan dyeing his hair blonde if he had, didn't
he? I've got to be younger than Glenn Whelan, surely.
Maybe you are now. As I say, we've all lost a year, haven't we? So
yeah, I know I'm older than Gabby, which is frightening.
To be fair, most of these old boys haven't got hair, have they? So at least you're doing all right in that respect.
Yeah, the hairline's surviving, which is a good thing. And unfortunately, Villa didn't survive last night, put under a lot of pressure by West Ham, who I've got to say, straight off the bat, give them a whole lot of credit. I thought they were very, very good, Greg, a very accomplished side, West Ham. But Villa, second best throughout the game, never really got going and end up losing 3-1.
Yeah, quite a surprising performance, actually. I mean, looking back on it now, you probably think, well, that was going to happen at some point, wasn't it? Because of the fact that Villa had so many games in such a short space of time. Looking back on it, West Ham were by far the better team, I thought. You know, Villa second best throughout. Thought Villa were leggy, a little bit wasteful in possession. And just couldn't really get at West Ham. And West Ham pretty much did to Villa what Villa have been doing to other teams this season, haven't they? It was almost like a role reversal. You know, they defended very well. They were very well organised at the back and then hit Villa on the counter-attack. And, you know, I usually look at Dean Smith's demeanour after the game to see, you know, sort of what he thinks and how bad the game was, how good the game was. And yesterday it was probably the most frustrated he's ever been in a press conference after. So, you know, clearly he was frustrated as well.
Yeah, we were well beaten, never really in the game. I mean, thank God there's no midweek games next week, because I think that's three Wednesdays in a row we've lost in the midweek on BT Sport. Yeah, on the Saturday, Sunday games, we seem to pick up and be able to pick up results, but midweek seems to be a complete no-go at the moment. People, well, Twitter, social media, everyone's saying we needed to rotate. We looked tired. Dean Smith come out and said fatigue's nothing to do with it. We were just beaten by the better team. Where do you sit with all that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, isn't it? It's easy to look back in hindsight and think, well, yeah, that they should have, you know, Smith should have rotated it. But for me, I think the whole, you know, rotation, it doesn't always stand up for me, you know. I mean, what's to say that you bring two or three different players in and they still don't make a difference? You know, he did try it with El Ghazi, it didn't work. I think it was just one of those nights where pretty much everything seemed to go against Villa, didn't it? You know, the players that have performed really well this season even had a few slip-ups themselves. You know, I'm thinking of Martinez, who's been sensational this season. It wasn't really his night. Jack Grealish, it didn't quite work for him. You know, Koufal stifled him for long periods. I didn't think Barkley or McGinn really got going as much as they have done in previous games or, you know, earlier in the season. Just thought that on the whole, Villa just weren't quite at it. And I think the key now is, does Dean Smith make a change for the Arsenal game or a couple of changes? He certainly changed his system. It's not like he's just standing here, you know, on the sidelines idle, asking the players to do one thing and sticking to it. You know, he's trying to mix things up as and when he sees it. It's just a case of it didn't work last night. You know, he tried to put Villa on the front foot more than West Ham. You know, he wanted to get in behind those two holding midfielders, but it actually happened that it turned out the other way around, and Lingard and Benrahma and Antonio, the three of those up front, who, you know, in the attacking areas, I thought were fantastic, and they were the ones that caused the problems, unfortunately.
Yeah, as you were at the game, from what I could tell, I don't know whether this is true, it looked more like a 4-3-3. Like last night, it looked like McGinn had more of a license to get forward than Barkley, but it's obviously it didn't work because we lost 3-1. Was I seeing correctly?
Well, yeah, I was noticing that slightly throughout the game. It did change, and then you know Smith came out afterwards and confirmed it. He said, "Look, okay. I changed the system." He said he put Luiz as the holding midfielder, and then you know two others in a more advanced role. Where you know I spoke to John McGinn a couple of weeks ago, and he says that his role changes game to game. He says sometimes I'm asked to play as a number 8. Sometimes I'm asked to play as a number 6. And clearly last night, you know, he was asked to play in that more advanced position and it didn't quite work really. It felt like Villa got overloaded in the midfield and they almost lost that midfield battle, which we haven't said too many times this season. So, yeah, it was just a bad night, one that didn't really work for them, and it's just how they bounce back now.
That feels a really strange thing to do because in the main, we've played 4-2-3-1 and I would say that's worked very, very well. I don't have Barkley down as an 8. I thought he was off last night. I think he looked like the games were catching up with him. He's come back from an injury as well. I just think we look better with 4-2-3-1 and it just didn't look right at any point last night. And to try that 4-3-3 against West Ham, I can kind of see why. But I don't think Barkley's the right player for 4-3-3. I think he's better when he's closer to Watkins.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, that showed, hasn't it, in games that have passed by. I think Smith just felt like there was, you know, a chance to get in behind Rice and Souček and cause some havoc in there. But the way I looked at West Ham, they were so well organised. You know, they really stuck to their shape and stuck to their tasks. And they just won the little individual battles, you know, like Kufa was the main one, wasn't he? You know, he did a job on Grealish for large periods of the game. They doubled up on him with Fredericks also there who came in. And it just felt like West Ham with their fresh legs, Lingard and Fredericks, who just added a bit more pace and a bit more dynamism going forward, proved to be the difference really. And it's a strange old season, isn't it? Because we're seeing, look, Villa have lost 4 games in the last 6 now. So it's almost taken the gloss off a really nice start. But what we're seeing is Villa winning 1 week, losing the next week. And it's the same with a lot of other teams, isn't it? You know, Liverpool have lost.
Yeah.
They're the champions and they've lost to teams you wouldn't expect them to lose to. Man United lost to Sheffield United a couple of weeks ago. Tottenham seem to be on a little bit of a stuttering run at the moment. Arsenal have had their own problems this season. So it feels like there's still plenty of opportunities to finish, you know, the second half of the season on a high and end in a decent position still. I just think we're going to have to accept that there are going to be setbacks along the way. And it's just frustrating, isn't it, Dan, when they come?
Yeah, I mean, you look at the league, though, as an entirety, like you've just said, and Manchester City are the only team that are consistent at the moment. They're the only team that aren't really losing games. Even Man U, who were doing really well and having a good season, obviously lost at home to Sheffield United the other day. There's no shame in losing to West Ham because I actually think now they're going to be pretty close to the top 6. I think they're a good outfit going forward. And like you've said, I think they're very, very solid at the back. They're tough to break down. They've got a good defence. And then the two that sit in front of them, Souček and Rice, are very good footballers and very good defensively. And Souček, good going forward as well. So it's always going to be a tough game. Lingard came in and from minute one, really, he was picking up little pockets of space and he caused us problems, didn't he? We never really lived with Jesse Lingard. I mean, for someone who hasn't played football for a very long time, that freshness actually seemed like a benefit, didn't it?
Yeah, it was interesting, really, because I didn't expect him to look so sharp and so quick. He looked really fit, considering he hasn't played for, you know, good few months at Man United, hasn't he? I think he's only made one start this season. Is that right? Or one appearance?
Yeah, he was probably in the cup as well.
Yeah, so, you know, fair play to him for coming in and making a difference because, you know, he certainly did that. And Moyes said after the game, he said that he needed to freshen things up in his attacking areas. He said that he felt they were a little bit light. They obviously lost Allaire, haven't they, to Ajax. So they're in a similar situation to Villa where they haven't really got an experienced backup striker on the bench. But he just felt that they needed another attacker in the final few days of the window. And, you know, he came in and really did a good job. I mean, we might see that at Villa with Morgan Sanson in future weeks. You know, he might bring that fresh impetus and those fresh legs. I mean, probably expect him to play on Saturday now and give him a go, wouldn't you, after watching for the last couple of games? And just felt like that was one game too many for Villa in a run of games, you know, that they were starting to look like they were on their last legs against Southampton, but somehow, you know, managed to hold on despite, you know, a late onslaught on their goal. But yeah, the West Ham game, unfortunately, just exposed a little bit of tiredness, I think, in the team.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Hi, I'm James McNicholas, and I'm here to tell you about the latest series of Beyond the Headline, the making of Big Sam.
If I did anything wrong, why did they pay me off?
You see, Sam Allardyce seemingly can't quit English football, and English football can't quit him. But why? Why does football keep coming back to Sam Allardyce? To answer those questions and many more, you'll hear from former Hull City manager Phil Brown.
He didn't mind having the crack, he didn't mind having the banter, but he would prove his way was the right way.
Dundee United manager Mickey Mellon.
I signed for Sam Allardyce, really.
And of course, Father Joe Young, owner of Limerick FC, where the Big Sam story began.
Now I said, Sam, this is the ultimate goal. Now I'll show you what we have. And I brought him up and he said, Jesus, Father Joe, are you serious? I said, look, nothing is impossible to those who believe.
You'll learn about his time in America at the Tampa Bay Rowdies, the way he revolutionised English football, and of course, the England debacle. You can hear it all now and ad-free via the Athletic app. Just search for Beyond the Headline now.
And I think one thing that makes this podcast a bit different is that you actually do get to go and speak to Dean Smith after the games. Did he say anything about Jack? And obviously, they did a job on Jack. He was still one of our most influential players in the game. He didn't have a bad game by any stretch of the imagination, but it's fair to say he was stifled with the two fullbacks essentially playing against him. I personally, in my personal opinion, I think it took too long to move Jack to the number 10. I think out on the left it wasn't working, and I think he should have been moved to the 10 earlier, and I don't think Barkley was having a great day. I think we took too long to do that. Did he say anything about Jack and how they lined up against?
Yeah. So we asked him about Jack. Obviously, you know, he wasn't quite at his best, was he, for the first 60 minutes? You know, out on the left, he didn't really get much joy because Fredericks and Kufau were both on to him. I think when you've got somebody as good as Jack, we all expect him to somehow find a way through, don't we? And, you know, there were a couple of occasions where, I think there was one occasion where Barkley smashed a ball into him. You know, it was way too hard anyway, but, you know, you just expected him to take it down, didn't you, still? And he missed, you know, he couldn't get it down. And, I mean, that's the standards that he set. You know, that's how, that's how good of a player he is now. We expect him to do everything right. I'm not so sure whether it did take too long because, look, you know, Smith made a change at half-time, didn't he? Felt that Al Ghazi, who probably did deserve his chance, having, you know, played really well at the back end of December and kind of lost the momentum going into January by losing his place. It felt like he deserved a chance. He had 45 minutes, didn't really do what, you know, Smith would expect him to do. And Traore then came on, and I thought Villa started the second half quite well. Thought that they were the better team, but then it just started to fall apart. And yeah, I mean, I don't think it took him too long because I think the way Grealish has performed on the left so far this season, you just expected him to come good at some point anyway. And to be fair, he did come good in the game, didn't he? Albeit moving into the middle, you know, he got another assist. He almost set up another one for Watkins, and Gareth Southgate was in the stands watching. So I think still he would have been impressed with him.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying, but for me, as soon as we moved him, he got an assist and we looked like we might score a goal. So from that point of view, you could say, yeah, it did take too long. And I felt a bit sorry for El Ghazi because he came into a team that didn't play well in the first half. He's obviously the one who's been sacrificed, but I actually really thought that we missed Traore in that first half. I think for all the talk of rotation and fresh legs, like you say, we changed that and it didn't really work. Traore, he moves the ball quickly. And I think that's something that we missed. He plays quick 1-2s. He's always on the move. And I really thought we were a bit static in that first half. And Traore is someone who's always on the move. You'd think he's probably going to come back in on Saturday, wouldn't you?
Yeah, possibly. Or, you know, there might be a call to bring Trezeguet back in. You know, if you think back to the start of the season, he was performing very well. And, you know, he was a big part of how Villa were playing and how they were pressing opponents and winning the ball back in dangerous areas and then obviously going on to win games. So I think the right midfield position is quite strong, isn't it? Because you've got the strongest area,
I think.
Yeah, you know, you've got three options there. So yeah, I mean, it's one of the three, maybe. I think it'd be too difficult to call at the moment.
The goals all felt avoidable, didn't they? I think, I suppose that's the annoying thing. We all hold our hands up and say West Ham with a better side, but the three goals from a Villa defensive perspective were poor. I mean, Emi Martinez is the first iffy game he's had. It's the first time I've looked at a couple of goals that we've conceded and thought, I think he should have saved that, which is a shame, really, because in half the games he's played, he's kept clean sheets, which is incredible. But unfortunately, last night, in a day where nothing really went great for Villa anyway, he'll probably be feeling he should have done better with a couple of the goals.
Yeah, look, I expect he'll be looking through his clips today, you know, very disappointed. And that will be the first time this season that he's had to face such disappointment because, you know, for me, he's been Villa's best player, you know, by far. He would be the player of the season if there was a vote to be cast right now. I think he's been excellent. I mean, when you look back through all of his saves, he saved Villa so many points. And look, you know, even with his errors, I still think Villa would have lost the game last night. It just wasn't meant to be for them. So, yeah, a disappointing night for Martinez. But, you know, it shows that he's human almost after all, isn't it? Because, I mean, you know, in previous podcasts we've done, we've debated whether he's the best goalkeeper in the world right now. And, you know, that there really aren't many to challenge him, are there, in the form that he showed this season. So he'll bounce back. He showed that he's an excellent goalkeeper and, you know, he's almost earned that mistake, hasn't he, with all of the exceptional saves he's made previously.
In some ways, him having that off night on a day when we were bad anyway, I kind of feel like I'm glad it was then rather than a game that was in the balance and close where we're playing really well and he chucks one in. But yes, surprising just because he has been so consistent through the whole season. Watkins scoring again is a positive, isn't it? I thought he was our best player probably last night in the grand scheme of things. I know a couple of the goals came from him kind of like losing the ball in some ways, but he never gave up. I thought he still looked lively and he didn't really get much service, did he?
No, and look, you know, again, Dan, on another day, he might have had a hat-trick, mightn't he? Missed a good header, hit the post with another chance.
Yeah,
then also
great.
had the chance after he scored. I like the way he never gives up. Yeah, there were a couple of probably bad touches that you know, led to the goals, but I wouldn't specifically pin the goals on him because, you know, it's a team effort, isn't it? And the way Villa were exposed for the second goal, I think it was 3-on-2 at one point, you know. And
scary,
Dean Smith came out after and said, look, that doesn't, you don't even play like that and leave 2-on-3 in Sunday League football. You know, that's how disappointed he was with that. So, look, there were a lot of errors throughout the game and I don't want to criticise Villa too much because they've been exceptional this season, but that was one of the games where it just felt like everything compounded and, you know, they just sort of lost the focus a little bit. But for Watkins, you know, it's another goal. I think that's 3 in 4, isn't it? He seems to get chances almost every game. Gareth Southgate was there watching last night and, again, he probably would have been impressed with him because although I think it would be a long shot for him to get into the England squad, I think the way he plays and his style probably suits the way England want to play, don't they? You know, the way he sets the tempo, he's always closing down, you know, the goalkeeper or the defenders. He presses well and efficient there. And I think that's what Southgate likes. And if he keeps scoring goals, he can't be ignored forever, I don't think. So, yeah, you know, a little bit of a plus for him getting another goal, but he'll be disappointed like the rest of them.
Yeah, I think he's a phenomenal player. He's someone I really enjoy watching and someone I've grown to love as the season goes on. Do you think Villa, I mean, they won't play against a team like West Ham every week, a very physical side, very, very good at what they do. Do you think there is a case that Villa lack a bit of physicality in their game? We've kind of looked a little bit lightweight in some ways last night.
Yeah, I mean, to an extent, if we're you know, really picking the team apart, I suppose they're quite a short team, aren't they? If you take out Mings and Konsa, and I suppose Cash is quite athletic, isn't he? So he makes up with his shortness, so to speak. I mean, he's a medium-sized player, isn't he? But
I bet he's taller than you, Greg.
Yeah, he probably is, yeah. So, look, he's definitely not short. That was the wrong word. But yeah, I mean, look, if you look at the midfield, I suppose, you know, McGinn, Luiz, Trezeguet, when he plays, Watkins, they're relatively short side, aren't they? You know, they're certainly not tall. And I think the one area maybe Villa do need to strengthen is somebody who could, you know, that destroyer type in the midfield. But look, you know, I think they've made great strides in transforming the squad and rebuilding it. There's really not that much wrong with it. And you can't completely transform a squad, can you, in just a couple of windows? So that'll be something they'll probably be looking at in the next window. Because if you think back to the start of the season, the criticism or, you know, the weakness that we were highlighting and many others was that Villa had a lack of pace, wasn't it? You know?
Yeah.
And look, they've addressed that now. So they can't just keep, you know, buying players and trying to fix everything. It's a work in progress. So, there are going to be games where they come up against tall sides and possibly get out-battled. But I think they've got enough quality to cause some of their own problems as well.
I'm not saying he's going to come in and be the midfield destroyer because I don't think that's his game at all, although I do think he's an all-round midfielder. But what was Sanson's presence like when he came on the pitch? He looked quite big to me. I don't know whether I was seeing things on the TV, but in the flesh, what did he look like?
Yeah, he looked like, you know, he wanted to get on the ball and pass it and, you know, move it quickly and efficiently. I thought he did that. I think he misplaced one of his passes in the 10-15 minutes, but it's going to take a little bit of time for him. You know, there was a barking order from Mings for him to mark, I think it might have been Souček at one of the corners, and just noticed how he lost him at the corner, and Mings was able to recover. So, you know, there are going to be little things like that where he needs to know, you know, how to listen to the orders from his teammates, how they set up at set pieces and stuff. That's going to take a little bit of time because, you know, the players that are there now have been together for a while now, haven't they? And, you know, they've been able to work on things together. So Sanson coming in, he's going to need that little bit of time just to settle in. But I thought it was an all right debut.
But there's
you know, plenty more to come.
Yeah, he's only on for 10 minutes. And obviously in the time he came on the pitch, we scored a goal. He looked hungry for the ball. Looked like when he was picking up the ball, he put himself in good positions in space. So he's one to keep an eye on and someone who might end up starting against Arsenal at the weekend. Before we go on to the Arsenal game and have a little look at that, should we just talk a little bit about the quiz you've got coming up, Greg, on the 18th of February?
Yeah, so we're running quizzes all through February for prostate cancer to raise some funds for prostate cancer. Obviously, lots of people have joined up already. I'm really looking forward to it, actually. Yeah, I've said last week that, you know, completed the questions, and the questions are quite tough, and I think even you'll struggle, Dan. So
No.
We're looking forward to it, and there's some nice prizes up for grabs as well, and, you know, the chance to go into the grand final against the winners from other clubs and then win a nice big grand prize as well. So yeah, really looking forward to it. It'll be nice for some of the subscribers to come and join the Zoom call, and we'll get some drinks on as well, I suppose, because it's going to be a night thing, and, you know, we're all bored in lockdown, so alcohol saves us all a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, it'd be good to see some of the subscribers, as you say. As I said last week, the comment section underneath your articles is one of the best ones, I'd say. If you go through the article, because I read a lot on The Athletic, I'd say the comments in for the Villa bits are very switched on and quite mature is not the right word, but you know what I mean.
It's
very considered in there. Yeah. So yeah, it'd be good. Obviously, I need to sign up myself because I've not done that yet. You haven't told me about the sign up, so I need to make sure I go and get that done. Let's look at the Arsenal game then. I mean, fairly good time to play Arsenal, Greg. And actually, I think it's a better game for us than West Ham. I think it will suit us in many ways, and the chance to do the double over the Gunners.
Yeah. You know, if you can beat Arsenal twice in a season, you're doing something right, aren't you? Because, you know, despite their difficulties this season, they are still classed as probably an elite team, aren't they? You know, they're always up there. Got world-class players in their squad. And yeah, I think it'd be a good day for Emi Martinez because, you know, the focus will be on him again. No Leno in goal for Arsenal because he was sent off last week.
Absolute comedy that was.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? You know how things turn around. You know, because in another world, Martinez would be starting for Arsenal against Villa now, but instead it's the other way around. So yeah, I think you're right. I think it's a good time to play them. I mean, have you been watching them much, Dan? Because the last few games I've missed, actually, Arsenal.
Yeah, they've picked up. I think they were, I mean, I don't think Wolves are any great shakes at the moment anyway, but they were on top in that game until the Luiz sending off. They were popping the ball around nicely. I think Saka is on really good form. I thought he looked pretty lively the other night against Wolves before the sending off. I think, like Villa, they're one of those teams for a few weeks they'll look excellent and then they might lose a couple of games. But I think they're the kind of opposition that this Villa side will thrive on. It's not as if they're going to come to Villa Park and sit back. I think there'll be space for us to utilise and break like we did at their place earlier on in the season. I think it's a good time to play him. It could be Renarsson in goal, who looks a bit shaky. It depends whether Matt Ryan recovers from his injury or not. Luiz has actually been performing quite well for Arsenal, so him being suspended is probably a little blow. I know they've appealed it. I'm not sure they'll get away with it because it was the letter of the law. So I think they're the kind of opposition that suit Villa more so than playing a team like West Ham, to be honest, Greg.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think if you look back at the game at the Emirates, I think that was Villa's most complete performance of the season. I think, you know, the 7-2 win over Liverpool was brilliant, you know, and will be talked about for many years to come. But I think everything went right at Arsenal, didn't it? They really, you know, that it was a really professional job and packed with a lot of quality as well. So, yeah, it's one I'm looking forward to because Villa seems to have a little bit of a hold over Arsenal as well, don't they, in recent years? You know, they've performed well and picked up decent results. None more important than that one at the back end of last season at home when, you know, they didn't win that, they wouldn't be in the Premier League right now. So let's hope there's a repeat of that, mate.
Do you think there'll be a reaction? Because against Southampton, to be fair, after they lost to Burnley, there was that reaction and they were a bit more considered defensively, put in a really astute performance, got the goal and won ugly to an extent. Do you think there'll be a reaction again?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, this is what I love about this new Villa side is that they always seem to fight back and they always seem to have something in reply. You know, when people start criticising them, they come back with and win a game or prove everybody wrong. And as you say, yeah, the Southampton game was a real eye-opener for me. I thought they went back to basics. They tried to, it was that insatiable desire just to keep the ball out of the net. You know, they were desperate not to concede. And I think having lost again last night, they'll want to make amends for that. And that's the biggest difference with this Villa side. They don't dwell on a defeat like last year. They managed to find a way to, you know, to pick themselves up. And yeah, I think there might be changes. As I said earlier, I don't expect there to be, you know, widespread changes, but no. I just think a couple of fresh legs might make a difference. Maybe Sanson in the middle, maybe even a game for Nakamba. You know, I thought he did well the last time he came in. Is it a game where Davis is used a little bit more? I mean, maybe Villa can go with two up top at some stage in the game and see how that makes a difference.
Yeah, I thought he might get on last night actually against the more physical side of West Ham, but it never happened. He doesn't seem to be getting much football at all at the moment, and January has passed without Villa getting a striker in, but it is what it is. I think as Villa fans, there is not a lot to complain about at the moment. And if you are moaning, I think you really need to get some form of reality check, to be honest, because where we are is incredible, and there's still plenty of time and plenty to play for.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Let's do the top five then, Greg. We've moved it to a top five this week because I had to pick more than three. Three was a struggle in you. We've gone with shirts, haven't we?
Yep. Well, you're the master with this one, mate. You've got them all. So I'll hand it over to you.
Yeah.
Watch and laugh.
Yeah. I mean, there is some that I would have picked that I don't have, to be honest. So I picked five from the ones that I do have. So I've got most shirts, pretty much every shirt from every season since I've had a season ticket. So since 1993, and I've got a few classics as well. So I've gone with a mix. Some of these you might say aren't the best shirts, but to me, they're the most iconic ones. So the first one, we've got the 1982 home shirt. This one says champion.
Good shout. Good shout. Yeah, give you that one.
So this is an original. It's in pretty decent nick. I was quite lucky to pick this up, to be fair. So I've gone with that one just because it's a beautiful shirt and what I would say, proper claret, and it's iconic.
No names? No names on the back?
No, not on this old one. I don't know whether you could get names and numbers on the back in those days, to be honest, Greg. I'm not sure. So, yeah, that's the first pick. I will say this is in no particular order, to be honest, because I like all five of these shirts. Next up, the Muller Green shirt, 93 to 95. I mean, realistically, it's a very ugly shirt, isn't it? It's not the best shirt in the world.
It's Marmite. Do you know, it's Marmite because I actually did a whole story on this for The Athletic last year because Villa sort of brought it back again, didn't they? It's their third kit last year. So I spoke to almost every player who played in it and some loved it and some hated it. And you know, I think it was Tony Daly who said it's Marmite. You know, he happened to be one that liked it.
It's just iconic, I think.
Guy Whittingham didn't. You know, it's just different for different people. Certainly, that's the best way to describe it, isn't it? Iconic.
Yeah, I like the Muller sponsor as well. I don't know why. I mean, that was the first season. I had a season ticket, so obviously I've got memories from that kind of thing of those shirts being worn. The next one I don't think many people would pick, but it's just a shirt I really like. It goes against tradition, the 1999-2000 striped shirt, LDV Vans, but I just really like it. Boateng on the back. We got to the FA Cup final. It reminds me of John Gregory and Ian Taylor, who were obviously my two heroes growing up. So I think that's why it resonates with me a little bit. But I don't think many other people would choose that. I don't know what your thoughts are on it.
Well, it's just people's individual thoughts, isn't it? You know, that's what makes kits so, you know, unique because some people love them, so some people hate them. So it's just something that, as you say, if it resonates with you, then totally get that, mate.
Next one, the Luke one from the promotion season, the Luke Combs shirt. This is John McGinn's actual shirt. So it's signed on the back. He wore it in one of the games. But again, just an iconic shirt, Greg.
That's a good one to get. How did you manage to get that one? Is that a close link at the club or a secret friend of Ginner?
No, someone from Villa was very kind to me and knew I collected shirts and said he had this and gave it to me because he knew I collected them. So I was very, very grateful to receive that. It's a nice memento. I will get that one framed because I'm never going
to
wear it.
What a great shirt, you know, that was from the playoff final, was it, that one?
It's not from the playoff final, but it was
from the season, sorry.
Obviously he scored the winner in the playoff final and we got promoted. Yeah. So it's a nice little memento to have. But everyone loves the Luke shirts as well. Did you speak to Luke a few months ago and they were talking about re-releasing them because they just did so well and they go for hundreds and hundreds on eBay now, these shirts. So he was talking about doing another run of them and getting them out in the next year or so. That there's a certain amount of time that has to pass before you're allowed to do it, apparently, and it'd be classed as retro, but they're looking at doing it for sure when I spoke to Luke, which is quite interesting.
It's quite a lucrative market now, isn't it? You know, we shirt selling, you see so much. I remember doing a story with a couple of shirt collectors really interesting, but seems to be growing in popularity, doesn't it?
I mean, I love it. I mean, I go through phases. I won't buy one for months and then I'll just be on eBay every 5 seconds buying one, but I'm close to completion now, so obviously it's slowed down, but the ones I need will just be mega bucks because they're rare third shirts that like you can't get anywhere. So it's an expensive hobby, let's put it that way. I'll just put this last one on there.
Oh, he's going for the Bozzy one again.
It's the best one.
We knew this one was coming. This was the one that you wore when we did the interview with Bosnich, wasn't it? And that's why he loves you so much now.
No, he loves me anyway because my football viewpoints are so considered, Greg. Mate, so many good footballing points.
So, Dan, it was nothing to do with the fact that, oh, Mark, I'm wearing your shirt at the moment.
No, it was just look what that's done to my hair. I'm struggling with my hair anyway. I've been made to put the top on. But yeah, this is the best one.
It's a quality shirt, isn't it? Let's be honest.
This is the best. This is the best one. This one's got Bosnich on the back as well. It's just. I'd love to have all these goalkeeper tops from that era, but they're impossible to get. But this was just he was again another hero growing up. It's just such an iconic shirt. I mean, I've said iconic about all the shirts so far, but this one really is, isn't it, Craig? The goalkeeper shirt.
Yeah, it's just one that everyone remembers, isn't it? You know, everyone just remembers it. You know, even neutral fans who watch the Premier League, they'll remember Bosnich in that, and it's just a classic shirt, isn't it?
Yeah, it's my favourite shirt, I think, which is weird for a goalkeeper shirt to be your favourite shirt, but I had it as a kid, just absolutely loved diving around and playing football in it. It was just pretending to be Mark Bosnich. It's just, I love that shirt, and I'm sure most Villa fans who are of my age had this shirt growing up and loved pretending to be Mark Bosnich.
Definitely. Well, you've done well, mate. You've redeemed yourself after a couple of disappointing weeks. Yeah, yeah.
Well, no, last week was okay.
Our new shirts would be your right up your street.
Yeah, unfortunately, I've had to pull them all out of the drawers that they're in, so there's about 100 shirts just sat on our spare bed at the moment. The wife wasn't very happy last night when she saw that, but that does us for this week's episode of 1874. We'll be back at some point next week. No midweek game next week, Greg, which is a rarity nowadays, isn't it? A chance to have a rest for you.
Yeah, good for me, to be honest. I've had a couple of away games in a row, so nice to get a bit of a break. And I think the players need it as well. It seems like, you know, they need to rest and recuperate a little bit.
Greg and myself will be back next week. Anything coming up just before we shoot, Greg? Any articles coming up that you can tell us about?
Might be a special one if I get a little bit lucky over the weekend, but I'll let you know.
You make your own luck, Greg, so try and make that happen. We all want something nice to read. Thanks for joining me. Thanks, everyone, for listening and watching some of this as well, because some of it's been done on video. Have a good weekend. Up the Villa.
The Athletic.